year, the Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before it.
Good morning. The first case for oral argument this morning is Estate v. Nguyen, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, Mr. Butler.
Nguyen.
Nguyen. Okay, thank you. Okay. For the appellant, Nguyen, is Mr. Michael Butler, an attorney from Sioux Falls. And for the state of South Dakota is Mr. Craig Eichstedt, a deputy attorney general from Pierre. Mr. Butler, you may proceed, sir, and you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court, I am here on behalf of Tam Nguyen, who in March of 2004 was driving across the state of South Dakota in a vehicle with Washington State license plate. She was stopped in Minnehaha County by Trooper Christopher Colts for following another vehicle too closely. Ms. Nguyen was asked to go back to Mr. Colts' vehicle, which she did. Inside the vehicle, Mr. Colts, his dog, identified by the name of Kaz, began barking. He actually began barking before Colts got out of his vehicle. He barked, as this tape will illustrate, which was admitted as Exhibit 1, barked intermittently on and off throughout the duration of the stop. While in the vehicle, Trooper Colts informed my client that the reason his dog was barking is because he detected the odor of a controlled substance on Ms. Nguyen. Later at the evidentiary hearing on the motion, he withdrew that contention and said the dog was simply barking due to the excitement of the moment. I make this point because in a previous hearing, and this was also part of our record here, and Mr. Colts was questioned about it, he acknowledged using a similar technique on a client that I happen to represent coincidentally. In that case, the gentleman got back into the vehicle with Mr. Colts. The dog was barking, as it is inclined to do. Mr. Colts informed him that's because he smelled a controlled substance. And at the evidentiary hearing in that case, again, Mr. Colts withdrew that contention and said the barking was simply the dog's excitement of the moment. I think it is important that I make this point for this reason. When we consider the broader question, everybody has an interest. Everybody has a bias. Everybody has an expectation. I submit based on these two points, Trooper Colts does utilize the aggressive nature of his dog, at least in an effort to induce an admission that the person's in possession of a controlled substance. The pattern just in those two cases was that the dog will bark, he'll tell the person the dog is barking to a controlled substance, and then if the case ends up in court, he withdraws that contention and acknowledges it's not. Why? Because the dog barks all the time. Now, there's two central issues I want to address in this case, and I know they're not dissimilar from questions presented in the Lockstead decision issued by this court in 2005. They are generally similar, but factually dissimilar. I had requested, and I appreciate the court's consideration of my request today to play the videotape, and I understand there may be very good reasons why that wouldn't be appropriate in oral argument. But
well, we will, as part of the record, review that. And I guess I would say that, 2 minutes is not unreasonable. It would set a precedent, and pretty soon we'd have a 20-minute recording, and we'd have no oral argument. But I want to assure you that the members of the court will look at that tape.
And I appreciate that, Mr. Chief Justice. I think it is absolutely central that you look at the tape in this case, and I'll explain why, and I believe it'll be very consistent with what I tell you. When Trooper Coase got out of his vehicle and deployed his dog, the dog is first taken to the driver's side door. The dog then passes once around the vehicle, showing no particular interest beyond doing its expected sniffing behaviors. On the second pass around the vehicle, what can be seen on the tape is that when the dog and the trooper come to the trunk, the trooper turns and faces the dog, positions himself in front of the dog. The dog stops at the trunk. It is at this point, while you won't hear it, You'll be able to see it, and it was testified to and admitted to, so it's not a point in dispute. Trooper Colts began using a specific word. It is a word used in the training of the dog. It is spelled gift, G-I-F-T, but pronounced gift, as if there were two E's, the German pronunciation. He repeats this word to the dog several times. It is only then, for the first time, that the dog exhibits any discernible enthusiasm, as Justice or Judge Lieberman, characterized the dog's behavior at that time. What we also know for a fact is the dog never scratched. Now, I know in cases that have come before courts, including this court, there is a great deal of discussion about what exactly is an alert behavior, what is an indication behavior, and what significance do they all have. In this case, I, through the use of an expert, and I hope in cross-examination, as well as in the testimony of a former state trooper who was a dog handler, established this point. There is only one behavior that is trained and reinforced and taught in aggressive indicating dogs: scratching. It is done through the use of a scratch box. That is the only mechanism or technique used to reinforce that behavior. In this case, the trooper testified that the dog is trained to scratch, to bark, and to bite. I specifically, in fact, he even went as far as to say the dog can choose or elect between any of the three. I asked the trooper, and it's cited in my brief, but I'm reading from page 61 of the initial hearing transcript. This hearing was conducted over three separate days. I asked the trooper specifically when he said the dog was trained in scratching, biting, and barking, and I said, the dog isn't given an option. Does it pick and choose what it wants to do, or is it trained to do a specific thing? Trooper Colts responded, I don't know. I don't know if it's trained to do a specific thing. I don't know. I think it's important, that testimony, for a particular reason. The court here, and as I anticipate my colleague from the Attorney General's office will say, is that the claim or statement by the trooper and Mr. Hunterman, that who was the expert in this case as well as he was in the Lockstead case, declaration that the dog is well trained is a sufficient basis upon which to conclude it's reliable.
Didn't he go further? Didn't Hunterman go further and say that that the training is no longer done simply for scratch response, that it's broader than that?
He said that, but what's interesting, here's what's important. He can never explain how the dog is trained in any other fashion other than to scratch. And I urge my colleague, I urge the court to scour this record. Somebody can show me what they do to train the dog to bite or to bark.
What did he say then? I took it that that's what he was saying.
He says, yeah, I think he was. He was trying to say it was trained in these other behaviors, but couldn't say what was done to train it. I again brought out the fact that a scratch box is used in their training. And I think it's interesting, if you look at your Lockstead decision where Mr. Hunterman testified in that case, the trooper testified that his dog indicated by scratching, and then he also referred to a lockup and stare. A lockup and stare is not a trained behavior. No one has ever suggested that it is. That is something that appears frequently in these cases that apparently is relied upon as a clue or a subjective clue to the trooper. But no one's suggesting a lock and stare, if that's the phrase, is a trained behavior. And in that case, scratching was what was trained. Here's the question that comes to me as I read these different decisions. If you testify enough, some things will come to light. So I have one dog, which Hunterman is involved in the training of, that scratches. And he says locks and stares. I have another dog that he's involved in the training of that he says is a barker, a biter, and a scratcher. Is there no uniformity in the training? So when they say we certify and train these dogs, what do they really mean? What does it mean? When the trooper who handles the dog can't tell me how the dog is trained and flatly says, I don't know, then can we rely on his other assertions of fact regarding the reliability of the dog? Consider there was an interesting, unanticipated comment by the trooper, and it came up when we re-adjourned for a second time. The dog in this case had been retired, and the trooper now had a passive responder. So the court, out of curiosity, when the trooper got up to begin resume testifying, he says the dog's referred to as Ajax. So the court says, so Ajax will be taught to respond in what fashion? Trooper Colt, sitting, staring, or laying down in a passive manner. To which I, of course, felt obliged to seize the moment and asked, how do you teach the dog to stare? He responds, I'm not a trainer, sir. I don't know. Question, but you said sitting down, staring, and what's the other thing? Laying down. So your testimony is how this dog is being trained, is how this dog is being trained. It stares at something and you can search it. Answer, yes. That is one of the final defined responses. And then I say, who told you that? Objection. We go down here, and again I ask, who told you that a dog can stare as its way of telling you it smells controlled substance? Answer, no one. Again, sometimes things are said that are important, that are unplanned. He declares, when my dog stares, I can search. Who told you that? Nobody. I've decided for myself.
And he is not the trainer of the dog.
Right. So he doesn't know. So when he states the dog is trained to stare, and who told him it could? No one. He isn't even referring to the fact that the trainer told him he could. He just says he can. Keep in mind, Trooper Colts also testified in this case, in his opinion, he can search vehicles on the basis of so-called untrained behaviors. Not even to wait for the so-called trained response. And I think when we say untrained behaviors...
I want to make sure we get this right. This is a trained response case, though, correct?
They're claiming that the dog did what it was trained to do.
Okay.
But as the tape will show, it never scratched, which everybody agrees. Right. It never barked once, ironically. It never barks at the car, although it barks at everything else. And he tells us that it didn't bark here, but he is able to discern the differences between a bark, which means he smells something, and a bark, which means he doesn't. That aside, what happened is after the trooper began to say geeft, geeft, geeft to the dog, which the testimony establishes is a term known to the dog, which the dog associates with getting a particular reward, that being the drug-scented toy, which is used in training. They say it is only done to get the dog excited to keep it searching, not to corrupt the search or trigger a false response. It is only then that the dog begins to mouth at the trunk. Never does it scratch. Now, I introduced into evidence in this case another tape made by South Dakota Public Broadcasting in which this dog and this trooper did a segment about how the dog is used to detect drugs and etc. And the reason I introduced the tape, because it illustrates unmistakably what the dog does when it smells the drug. This dog is an aggressive scratcher. In this tape, he is shown coming to the source area behind a wall, a light switch, in which he aggressively paws at the wall. One of the explanations given in this case for why the dog didn't scratch was Trooper Colt's testimony that the Highway Patrol doesn't want their dog scratching because they're concerned about liability if the dog scratches paint. And I asked Mr. Hunnamer about that, and he specifically testified he didn't know anything about that. Never heard about it, heard the rumor, was completely unaware of it. And the reason I bring that up is because the judge made a specific finding below that that was an explanation for why the dog didn't scratch, because of a South Dakota Highway Patrol policy. And I also noted in the state's brief, they suggested that Hunnamer went along with this. Hunnamer specifically disavowed any knowledge of it, And he also testified he continues to teach his dogs to do the same thing, continues to use the scratch box. That's a red herring claim to once again rationalize the absence of a trained response. I want to go into the cueing thing here again, but I want to back up and go, I'm not here today saying that well-trained drug detector dogs, explosive detector dogs, do not provide a useful and valuable tool to law enforcement. I'm especially self-conscious of it considering I passed by one here today coming to court. That is not at all what's being claimed. What I am concerned about is when we are in situations now where troopers or people utilizing these dogs come before courts and declare, I can discern from a change of breathing, from the way the dog's body is perpendicular to a vehicle, the way it stares, none of which a dog is trained to do to indicate the presence, and that tells them. And in this case, when the one thing we know he's trained to do is scratch doesn't occur, they do what Dr. Craig indicate, which is the alibi for the dog, and he says we had a policy. Now, of course, I had to ask if the dog was ever told about the policy because the dog stands at the trunk and never once does he give an inclination to scratch at that vehicle. That dog looks at the trooper when the trooper's talking to him and he reacts to the trooper. I brought in a highway patrolman who had handled dogs before, and I will tell you up front, Judge Lieberman didn't even discuss his testimony, said none of it was credible because the highway patrolman, Trooper Blassman, left the highway patrol after 18 years when he got into an argument with his supervisor regarding his job, and it was how quickly he'd logged in evidence after he made an arrest. And rather than be transferred, he resigned. But I want you to consider his testimony, because one thing Judge Lieberman doesn't do, any more than the state does here, is tell you why it shouldn't be believed other than that fact. Trooper Blassman says, I know the dog, I've trained with the dog. It's a scratch responder, Kaz, like his dog. The only behavior they trained us in was scratching. Trooper Blassman says, I watched the tape in this case. It's obvious Kaz never scratched. Trooper Blassman testified he was trained. You don't cue a dog. It is improper to cue it because you raise the specter of a false reaction. You corrupt the neutrality of the dog. Dr. Craig says the same thing. Consider also on the issue of cueing, in the case of Lockstead, the trooper tapped on the vehicle and the dog jumped on the vehicle. Apparently, the scratching policy wasn't an issue there, but nonetheless, that's what occurred. And there was an issue about cueing. Now, this court ended up relying on a finding of the trial judge regarding another aspect of the dog's behavior on the driver's side of the vehicle, I believe, and so that specific issue was never addressed. Mr. Hunnemer, at my hearing, testified, tapping is always wrong. That's improper cueing. It's done in training, but you don't take it in the field. I'd be interested to know whether he testified to that in the Lockstead case, but the principle's the same. He's asked, why is tapping wrong? Because you can trigger a response from the dog, leading to an unintended result. The dog's going to react. Verbal enticement, such as using the word give, is the same principle. You are causing a response in the dog. And in this case, the response in the dog wasn't to do what it was trained to do, but it began to mouth at the back of the trunk as it looked up at the trooper for guidance.
But I understood that word was part of the dog's training. That would be acceptable if it's part of the training, would it not?
In its training, in order, as Dr. Craig testified, and even to some extent, Hunnemer did with regard, there are things you do in training, as you're training the dog, that you don't do when you're in the street. When you're doing a street search, you let the dog conduct the search. You don't cue, or you don't take actions to cause the dog to react to you, rather than what he's smelling and trained to do. And I've cited at least one decision in there that talks about the practice of cueing being unethical and inappropriate. Anybody who's owned a pet knows you can cause a dog to respond to certain words that over time it's become accustomed to hearing, whether it's just common knowledge. And what was amazing at this hearing to me was to listen to how Mr. Hunnemer and Mr. Colts were able to speak for what the dog was thinking. Oh, no, the dog wasn't reacting to the prospect of getting a reward. He understood me to mean just get your nose right in there and search a little more. And we didn't have it. The only expert testimony came from Dr. Craig, an animal behavioralist, absolutely said that's nonsense. The dog hears reward. The dog does what it thinks it's supposed to do to get the reward. I'm asking this court in this case, and I know you can look back on your other decisions and say, we approve this here, we approve that there. Every record's different. But on the here, it didn't do what it was trained to do, one. But more importantly, on the issue of cueing, I think the court has to draw a line when it's so evident what is occurring. And I don't want to not be able to raise this issue, and I'm down to 20 seconds. So on the issue of reliability, we introduced records in this case that showed that it is more probable than not, 54% of the time over a 16-month period, when that dog gave whatever his indication was, a manual search revealed nothing in that car. This court said it was troubling, but it found that to be a sufficiently reliable track history. I'll address it more in my rebuttal time.
One question. The 2 minutes of tape that you wanted to show the court, did that include, say, 1 minute before and 1 minute after the point where you claimed the dog did not scratch on the trunk?
What I intended to do was to play the tape from the point at which the trooper is seen exiting the vehicle, going to the passenger side, and then doing the two times revolutions around. I was estimating my best guess at that point that it would approximate about 2 minutes time. I certainly urge the court to watch all of it, but I mean, it is the critical time on the tape.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Butler. Mr. Eichstead, you have 20 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. I did want to deal with several factual matters first. As to the beginning point where Mr. Butler addressed what went on in the car, my reading of Trooper Coltz's testimony was that he was saying that, in fact, his dog was indicating to the odor of a controlled substance on Ms. Wynn, the defendant, at the time that she was sitting in the car. And Trooper Coltz maintained this through the suppression hearing by saying not only was it the barking, but the fact that the dog was biting at his kennel mat, which was in the back seat. And my reading of the record is that the trooper testified that that the dog was in fact indicating at that point, and that he did not later disavow that. Counsel indicates that there.
What significance is that?
Well, it's a part of the it tends to refute what Mr. Butler is saying about the trooper's use of deception as a means to perhaps gain consent to search, something like that. But we would say that it doesn't show that he's using any deception in that instance.
Have you watched the tape?
I've watched the tape, yes.
Do you acknowledge that the dog started barking before Miss Wynn ever got back to the car?
Oh, yes. Yes, I'd acknowledge that. I think what distinguishes it is the biting at the kennel mat, which is a squeaking that the trooper refers to as a part of the tape. Defense counsel indicates that there are two issues similar to lockstep. We would say that they are virtually identical. There are obviously factual distinctions. There are always going to be factual distinctions in every case. But what's important here is that the facts back up the trial court's factual findings, the critical factual findings. And we would also argue that in watching the tape, and the trial court so found, that there is a discernible stopping and interest at various points in the car during the time that the dog's going around twice. And that's how the trial court viewed it, but of course this court can also view that tape. But it's interesting, and it's important to consider the fact that in addition to viewing the tape, the court was considering the live testimony that it heard and considering the troopers and, for that matter, Sergeant Hunterman's interpretation of what was going on there. Now, in Hunnemer's view, and he's the trainer, he's the expert at the dog in training the dogs. It's important to have not only the final trained response, which is an indication, but all the things that lead up to it are important as well. Hunnemer testified that you could have a dog scratching, you could have a dog biting, you could have a dog barking, and unless there's something preceding that in terms of an involuntary response, or for that matter, some interest that's shown by the dog, that final indication in and of itself may be meaningless, because dogs can scratch or bark or bite for other reasons, but what's important is that the trooper sees the other reaction, the reaction of the dog, and he has the experience, so that there has to be both the alert and the indication. And the difference between those two terms is explained in Lockstead, where it's stated that the alert constitutes involuntary behaviors that the trooper can perceive, and that we would also argue they can be perceived by the court if you watch the tape, and the trial court also saw the involuntary behaviors, the heavy breathing, the interest that the dog showed by stopping and sniffing at particular points along the in the two times around the car. And those are important in determining whether there is, in the end, a final indication. Now,
Let me ask you something right there.
Yeah, sure.
Are you suggesting that we should hold that a search is reasonable with something less than a final trained indication?
I think the court could well hold that, Your Honor. I don't think that's present in this case, but I think that if the dog is showing sufficiently that he is in fact doing that, then there may well be probable cause.
Well,
in the hypothetical case,
are there other cases that have found a reasonable search based on something less than a final trained indication?
I'm not aware of any. I don't think we've got any cited in the brief, Your Honor. But I do believe it might be. I'm not aware of decisions on that. I'm also not aware of any on any throwing it out. But be that as it may, of course, this is a final indication case based on the testimony of both Hunnemer and Colts in this case. And the final indication being biting.
Well, then tell me this. Where in the record is there witness testimony explaining how other final indications, specifically biting and barking, were trained behaviors?
There's the indication, and I can give you some citations to that. Specifically, Hunnemer testifies that what they are training is training an aggressive responder to get the toy out and not just a scratch. That's at the second suppression hearing at 205 and 206. And what he says there that they are training is that the dog is to find the odor and to, as he put it, get the toy out, which means he can dig it out by scratching, he can bite it out. As far as the barking is concerned, that's one that he said is trained in a situation where, for example, they would have the drugs or the contraband that the dog is supposed to be detecting hidden in something that he could not bark, bite, or scratch, such as a barbed wire fence. And at that point, then they would that's how they train the barking, or that's where the barking comes in. But the aggressive responder, what Hunnemer said was trained is getting the toy out. And what he means by that is they train the dog by having a drug scented toy, or in the case of a bomb-sniffing dog, an explosive-scented toy that's placed in some point or some place that the dog has to find it and get it out. And what he's trained to do is to get at it and get it out, which could be barking or scratching or biting, as in this case. And all three responses are trained, according to both Colts and Hundemer, by rewarding the dog in the course of the training when he does these things, and at the point where the contraband is found.
But doesn't then that support the argument that he was cued to bite in this case?
I don't see how, Your Honor.
You're saying when they train him, they cue him to get the toy out. And this dog doesn't show anything as it goes around until, I mean, the argument is on the other
side. That's the argument, yeah. We disagree factually, obviously.
That the dog doesn't actually do anything. It doesn't aggressively respond until the geeft word is used, and then it does something. It bites.
That's certainly the argument. We would disagree with that because specifically, and I'd say two things to that. First of all, in lockstep, there obviously is some cueing that's not just verbal, but it's also physical. Now, the state's expert, Sergeant Hundemer, says that...
Was there a tape in that other case? Was there a videotape in that other case?
I believe so. Okay. I believe so, Your Honor. And they talked about it. But at any rate, there was some verbal cueing, even some tapping there, I believe, and it was approved by the court. It was in that respect, although there was some concern about it. In this case, Hundemer said specifically that use of the term geeft is merely to focus the dog and to keep him interested in the search, that it doesn't amount to cueing. And there's specific testimony to that effect, and that's specific testimony that the trial court credited in its findings of fact and conclusions of law. So that's where it doesn't constitute cueing, and the court so found.
I mean to say that if there's the odor of drugs coming from the trunk, and the dog smells that, the officer still has to cue the dog to maintain his attention or his interest before he'll alert or indicate?
Well, first, Your Honor, we deny that there's cueing here. There's merely a maintaining of attention. But yes, that could well be. I mean, he's just Hundemer said
The dog's going to get bored and just pass by or not do anything unless he's told to geeft or geft.
No, I don't think so, but it's still, according to Detective Hundemer, is proper to use that term to maintain the dog's attention and to keep him focused. That's the testimony.
Whether it's cueing or not, what do you claim that the dog did in this case prior to that cueing or that indication by the officer? What did the dog do prior to that?
The dog
that either showed an alert or an indication.
He stops and of course it's bound up with the testimony and you can read the transcript and go through the tape as well. But the officer is testifying that he stopped, that he got perpendicular, that he breathed more heavily. Those were some of the alert signs that were shown on the tape and that the officer testified to.
He didn't at the trunk, though, did he? He didn't show any of those signs at the trunk.
Well, I believe
he walked by the trunk the first time.
The first time, but then on the second pass, and of course the testimony is that the dog was walking around twice and looking and sniffing and determining where the odor was strongest. And of course that's exactly the same thing that happened in lockstep. They passed around twice in order to determine at least from the dog's standpoint, where he would stop and where he would make his final indication. But I could be wrong, but I think there's an alert at the trunk too. There certainly was at the doors of the car. But then that of course is something that the court can determine, and that also the testimony of the trooper I think is important in that regard.
Isn't the idea of training these dogs, especially the aggressive responders, so that it becomes an objective standard for, I mean, later on when you are judging it from the court's perspective, that you could actually look at it and see, yes, this dog is alerting, indicating, whatever the right word is now. It seems that we're moving more and more towards a very subjective test, depending upon which officer we have and what the particular thing the dog is doing that day. Aren't we getting a little too far into subjective here? Shouldn't we be sticking with an objective standard that everybody can look at and see? And these dogs can be trained to actually do one thing that everybody could see whether or not it's doing. And aren't we moving away from that here?
It's possible, Your Honor, but I would disagree that there ought to be just the one response, because the situation is going to vary. As both Colts and Hunter pointed out, there may be a situation where you don't want the dog to scratch, the dog can't scratch, so it needs to be able, at least as to a final indication, and the difference between alert and indication is alert generally is these more subjective behaviors such as stopping, change in breathing, and so on, as opposed to the indication, which is used in lockstep, and I think also in this record, to show a final defined response. But it's our argument that the biting behavior here is a final defined response. Now,
but Trooper, the other video that was introduced on public radio video, that isn't what that indicates. It indicates that he scratches, and that's what he's been trained to do.
Well, he's also biting, I think, in that video at the and attempting to get the toy out. At least that's the testimony that he's doing both. That he's going after the toy. Now he's acting more aggressively there. But Trooper Colts believed that, and knowing the dog, he believed that if he had not ended the matter and pulled him back, that he eventually would have started scratching. Now, perhaps that's something that's subject to interpretation by looking at the video. But that's what he said, was that he would have started to scratch, and there was this concern.
Mr. Ike said on that point, is the state suggesting that would justify probable cause for a search? The fact that the officer can interpret that the dog is going to aggressively indicate in the future?
No, not really, Your Honor. It's the biting behavior that's the final indication here.
So to follow up on Justice Meyer-Henry's question, is it the state's position that some objective indication is necessary to support a reasonable search under the Fourth Amendment?
As I said earlier, Your Honor, I don't know of any courts that have said otherwise. It's our position that it may well be, but we're arguing in this case. We're arguing only that the final aggressive indication is there, that the biting constitutes that indication. So we're saying that it's there in this case. Now, whether in the hypothetical future case, the other indications, or excuse me, the alert in itself may be enough, I don't know. I tend to think possibly not. There isn't a lot of case law support for that. But at any rate, where there is evidence that the Highway Patrol did not want vehicles to be scratched because of the liability issue, and that's not only Trooper Colts that testified to that. It was also former Trooper Vlossman who indicated that he was aware that the Highway Patrol was concerned about scratching, and I disagree with by the way, with defense counsel's interpretation of what Sergeant Hunnamer said about that. What he said was that he didn't train the dogs any differently because of the Highway Patrol's policy on this. He said that he had heard rumors that they were doing that, and he was, so I would maintain that this shows that he was aware of that concern. But really what it is a field concern, and a concern that the troopers needed to address, not really something that was addressed in training. Nonetheless, it was a concern.
If the policy is to avoid the scratching in order to obtain an objective conduct on the part of the dog, wouldn't it be necessary to let the dog actually raise his feet off the ground, like in other words, to almost start to scratch or almost make contact? But to stop the dog while he's still standing there looking at the trunk doesn't seem to be an objective conduct.
Conceivably, Your Honor, but of course the testimony is that the biting that took place here constituted a final indication, so the scratching wasn't necessary. We're merely indicating that the Highway Patrol had these concerns. I also think that there are some problems with that in that. Once the dog starts scratching, it may not be as simple as just pulling him off, but that has to do with the training that's in the record as well. As we indicated, we're arguing that there was no cueing, that Hunnamer specifically said, and the trial court found that use of the term geeft was fine. We argue further that Detective Lossman's testimony was appropriately disregarded. In the last few seconds, I would just state that on the reliability issue, what's important there is the dog is trained to sniff the odor of drugs. And the only way that you can determine that is through training, and that training and certification, if appropriate, is enough. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Agstead. You have 10 minutes, Mr. Butler.
One of the first points that was raised that I wanted to go to the transcript on was regarding what occurred inside the vehicle. Is the trooper saying the barking was or was not an indication? And I'd simply refer to trial testimony from the 20th, or hearing testimony from the 26th day of July, page 32, and during the questioning by the prosecuting attorney, he was asked specifically, Trooper Colts, can you see or hear on the tape where Kaz is barking before he has contact with Miss Wynn? Yes. And do you know the reason for that? Just excitement, the excitement of the traffic stop, the anticipation of the traffic stop about ready to happen. The fact that another officer walks up the door, the fact that Miss Wynn gets out of the vehicle and walks to her vehicle, that's all barking on the tape, and that is not an indication, any of it. And Judge Lieberman never relied on what occurred in the vehicle. He referred to it, but didn't rely on it as a basis for his finding there was probable cause. Even with regard to these so-called alert behaviors, untrained in-order behaviors, Judge Lieberman refers to them. He never relies on them. You know, to start coming up, and Justice Zinner and Justice Meyer-Henry, you've posited the question each, are we coming before courts and saying, should the officer rely on his subjective interpretation of untrained behaviors? In reading records in these cases, including the testimony of Mr. Hunnamer, he's of the position that he can see things no one else can see as well. Trooper Colts has said similar things. That's fine. You know, we can give them all of that. I say I don't dispute their ability to read a dog differently than I can read a dog. But for purposes of establishing probable cause to search, I urge this court to establish an objective, discernible standard. Did the dog do what it was trained to do? But what is it trained to do? How is it trained to do it? Finally, was the dog in any fashion improperly cued, or was its behavior that it exhibited suggested by something the trooper did here? No one's arguing what the trooper did. Use of the word, geeft. What we're disputing is what its significance is. And I go back again to what Mr. Hunnamer testified to. Tapping on a vehicle would be an improper cueing. But he says the verbal use of the word cueing would not. How can you make that kind of distinction and make it make sense intellectually? If tapping is used to train the dog to go to certain places and to do certain things, and Hunnamer testifies quite clearly on this record, you can't do that in the street. The word gift is used to train the dog to get it to do certain things. He associates it with his reward, and it's done in training. But now in this case, Mr. Hunnamer says it's perfectly acceptable behavior. Is there a trend or a pattern in these cases of simply alibying or rationalizing for how the dogs are used? Dogs can certainly be used in a way that is an effective law enforcement tool. But when we get to the point where we put the trooper in charge of deciding for himself when he will and will not search, with the court being asked simply to endorse these searches without requiring a standard, then why would we ever come before another court? I mean, you're at a point where the trooper comes in, he says, I don't know how the dog's trained to do anything, except I know how we use the scratch box. I don't know how it's trained to bark. I don't know how it's trained to bite. I just know that it is. I don't know how it's trained to stare. I don't know how it's trained, but I saw these things. And essentially, you just got to take my word for it. I mean, it seems to me you get to a point where you run the risk of simply eliminating the role of the courts in this process.
We have a trial judge here who listened to all this conflicting testimony and the expert testimony. Why isn't the trial judge entitled to choose one expert to be more credible than the other, or one witness to be more credible? How do we override that?
I don't think it's a matter of simply saying, did he choose? Does his choice make sense based on the record? That's the role of the reviewing court. Yes, as an initial matter, Judge Lieberman makes a choice. And he said, frankly, with no more expertise than anybody else, it's not cueing. I declare it. It's not cueing. Well, I suggest that he chose incorrectly. I think common sense tells you, when you look at this, when you look at the testimony of Dr. Craig, he didn't say Dr. Craig didn't know what he was talking about. He did disregard all of Mr. Blassman's testimony, but I urge the court to, when you read the findings, to figure out what was wrong with it, other than he didn't want to consider it. But the court made the wrong choice. And that choice should not be insulated from review. You can read the Lockstead decision. I obviously didn't write it, Justice Kohnekamp. I know you did. But it seemed to me to be creeping toward the point that the court was becoming concerned about how far do we keep going before we say, use the dogs. Use them right. Go back to the original decision of the Supreme Court, which everybody refers to, United States versus Place. And the phrase that says, a well-trained drug detector dog can be used to establish probable cause. And as I said in the brief, the operative phrase, well-trained, is it doing what it's trained to do? I suggest what has happened is we're moving back from that. We've departed from that. That principle can be upheld by requiring the dog to do what it's trained to do, by requiring searches that are obviously discernibly based upon some objective standard. Blassman says his dog, like Kaz, is trained to do one thing, scratch. All the other behaviors are coincidental behaviors. Dr. Craig has said you only train dogs in one behavior. You don't train them in multiple behaviors because of the risk of confusion. It makes sense when you think about it. You don't give a dog a smorgasbord of options and then allow yourself to figure out which one of those means something. The only thing this record, outside of their conclusory statement, supports is a finding this dog scratches. And when Trooper Colt says he would have if I would have let him, I suggest to you that's gone too far. As for Sergeant Hunnamer, and this whole business about what the policy was, I believe the record in this case, if I can find my mark on here, is very clear. Sergeant Hunnamer said he is unaware of any policy regarding scratching. He was aware of a rumor regarding it. It had nothing to do with how he trained the dog. And he testified dogs are trained to scratch. I asked the court, and I think in that case we ask about Judge Lieberman. Judge Lieberman relied on that in his findings, a finding that the reason dogs weren't scratching is because of a highway patrol policy. That's not substantiated by the state's evidence. I want to address reliability briefly in my closing time. And it does tie into what's going on the first issue. In this case, I obtained records over a 16-month period, records in the field, that show this dog indicated, according to the trooper, 183 times. The records don't say how he indicated, just that he indicated. It showed that 99 of the 183 times a search revealed no controlled substances in the vehicle. Meaning it's more, the percentage came down to a 54% probability he'll find nothing when he says his dog indicates. Meaning it's more probable than not, when Kaz gives an indication, nothing will be found. Now the trooper opined in this case, well, that can all be explained by the fact that the odor's there, even if the drug isn't. And we went, and I obtained those records, and I went through a series of questions with him to which he comes to the conclusion there's always the scent if there's never the drugs. And he writes in his report such things as someone is related to someone who just got out of prison, someone just bought a new car, or someone, it says, is an admitted drug user. When I asked Mr. Coles about whether he targeted cars from Washington, and I realized that may not matter if he does, he denied it. Yet the records show that other than the state of South Dakota, he stopped cars from Washington more often than any other state. It showed in one case, within an hour, two cars from the state of Washington, two alleged indications, nothing found. Why is that? I think it's because Trooper Colts, as he has testified, says to him, an indication is everything. Trained, untrained, I can search if he doesn't do what's trained. It might not be that the dog's so bad, but it might be that Trooper Colts has decided he can search when he wants to search. And the 99 people that were, they found nothing, weren't sitting in court that day to be heard about what it's like to be detained on our state highway for however length of time based on an alleged indication and a search that finds nothing. We only see the ones where they find something. And from that point, I think sometimes there's a tendency to justify upholding the search because of what was found. I ask the court to think about everybody else, too. Thank you very much. I urge the reversal of the trial court.
Thank you, Mr. Butler. The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.